What if everything you've been told about Islamic tolerance was carefully constructed mythology? The myth of historical Islamic tolerance has become so deeply embedded in Western consciousness that it's rarely questioned. When terrorist attacks occur in places like Madrid or Istanbul, commentators invariably remind us these locations were once beacons of Muslim tolerance, where Jews and Christians supposedly lived in harmony with their Muslim rulers. This narrative gained academic legitimacy through Edward Said's influential Orientalism, making it taboo to question Islamic tolerance. Yet contemporary historical sources tell a markedly different story, one of systematic discrimination codified in law, where non-Muslims faced prohibitions against building churches, riding horses, bearing arms, and were required to wear distinctive clothing marking their inferior status. The myth's persistence isn't accidental. It emerged primarily through 19th-century European political machinations, particularly during the Crimean War, when Britain and France allied with the Ottoman Empire against Russia. The fabrication served strategic purposes, maintaining the balance of power in Europe while creating a buffer against Russian expansion. Today, this historical mythology continues to shape contemporary political discourse and policy decisions, often complicating efforts to address security challenges and integration issues in Western societies. The Quran's portrayal of Jews and Christians established a framework that profoundly influenced Islamic attitudes toward non-Muslims. While some verses suggest potential salvation for people of the book, the dominant narrative condemns them as faithless corruptors who rejected Allah's final revelation. Jews are portrayed as covenant breakers and scripture distorters, while Christians are criticized for their Trinity doctrine and Jesus' divinity. Crucially, Surah 9:29 establishes a hierarchical relationship, commanding Muslims to fight Jews and Christians until they pay the jizya with willing submission and feel themselves subdued. This verse, revealed late in Muhammad's life, has been interpreted as the definitive statement on interfaith relations. The Quran also warns Muslims against taking Jews and Christians as friends or allies. The Hadith collections reinforce these portrayals with explicit condemnations, including Muhammad's three-step approach: invite non-Muslims to Islam, demand jizya tax if refused, and seek Allah's help and fight them if that's rejected. This graduated response became a template for Islamic expansion and treatment of conquered peoples. Islamic jurisprudence established consistent legal structures for dhimmis, protected non-Muslim minorities, across all major schools of thought. Dhimmis had to pay the jizya tax, were forbidden from building new churches or renovating existing ones, had to feed passing Muslims, and were required to stand when Muslims wanted to sit. Additional restrictions prevented dhimmis from riding horses, bearing arms, selling wine or pork, or displaying religious symbols. They had to shave their forelocks for identification. These rules, codified in the Pact of Umar, became the template for dhimmi treatment throughout Islamic history. The 14th-century manual Umdat al-Salik, still endorsed by Al-Azhar University, details these restrictions, including dress codes and requirements that dhimmis keep to the side of streets and build houses lower than Muslims. In legal proceedings, dhimmi testimony against Muslims was inadmissible, and punishments for crimes were unequal. The system fundamentally served economic exploitation. Having conquered populations, rulers maintained control by weakening indigenous peoples through financial burdens and discriminatory laws. European travelers documented the degraded position of non-Muslims in Islamic lands. Romanian Jew Benjamin II compared Jews under Oriental barbarism unfavorably to those under liberal European regimes. In Morocco, General Domingo Badia Yeleblich observed Jews living in the most abject state of slavery in the early 19th century, forced to wear distinctive black clothing and remove footwear near mosques. William Shaler, U.S. consul in Algiers, 1816 to 1828, described the local Jews as a most oppressed people, vulnerable to Muslim violence. They wore dark clothing, couldn't ride horses or carry weapons, and needed special permission to leave the city except on specific days. After Arab conquest, non-Muslims were theoretically protected but faced numerous restrictions. Dhimmis paid double the taxes of Muslims and faced extortion under threat of collective punishment. In North Africa and Yemen, Jews performed degrading duties like cleaning public latrines, even on holy days. These Jews and Christians had inhabited these regions for centuries before Islamic conquest. Their subsequent treatment was subjugation, not tolerance. Modern radical Muslim theorists have fueled intolerance through influential writings that shape extremist thought. Sayyid Qutb, executed in 1966, portrayed Jews and Christians as eternal enemies of Islam, developing conspiracy theories he claimed were supported by the Quran. Qutb argued Islam must remove all physical and material obstacles to liberate mankind from submission to anyone other than God, requiring the defeat of non-Muslim authorities until they declare their submission through the jizya tax. Indian theorist Syed Abdul Allah Maududi similarly asserted Muslims must fight to put an end to the sovereignty of the unbelievers because authority to rule should only be vested in those who follow the true faith. He rejected democracy as spiritual evil, equating human-made laws with idolatry. These views have inspired movements from Al-Qaeda to ISIS, justifying violence against both non-Muslims and Muslims deemed insufficiently orthodox. Despite Western colonialism temporarily suspending the Dhimmi system, its legal framework was never formally repudiated. Today, radical Muslims have revived it as they return to traditional Islamic sources. Approximately 40 million Christians live as minorities in Muslim-majority countries. In Saudi Arabia, native Christians face execution if they reveal their faith. Across Muslim countries, Christians typically encounter discrimination in education, employment, and government interactions, often suspected of primary loyalty to the Christian West rather than their homeland. Christian responses vary regionally. Active resistance includes Sudanese Christians fighting against Sharia, causing over 2 million deaths, and Lebanese Christians opposing Islamization during the 1975 civil war. Passive resistance occurs in Egypt, Pakistan, and Iran, where Christians protest violence and seek basic rights like building churches. The West largely ignores their situation. Imagine if your religious freedom depended entirely on the majority's tolerance. The myth of Islamic tolerance has become so entrenched that non-Muslims now lecture Muslims about the true nature of Islam. Former Archbishop George Carey claimed Islamic extremism doesn't reflect true Islamic values, while American officials have told jihadists they were an insult to their faith. This approach ignores the historical and theological realities of Islamic doctrine regarding non-Muslims. For Muslims to make an Islamic political order attractive to non-Muslims, their scholars must engage in substantial ijtihad to revise elements of Islamic jurisprudence. This requires abandoning the Dhimmi archetype and developing frameworks that recognize full religious equality. President Sadat's 1977 visit to Jerusalem broke with 13 centuries of tradition. By meeting with Menachem Begin, Sadat rejected the dehumanizing Dhimmi Jew stereotype projected onto Zionists, demonstrating how personal engagement could transcend centuries of prejudice. True peace requires moving beyond tactical toleration to genuine recognition of equal rights. This includes re-examining traditional interpretations of religious texts and embracing religious pluralism. Only by acknowledging the historical record can genuine Islamic reform become possible, requiring honest dialogue about historical injustices while developing interpretations aligned with modern human rights standards.